rotation of the mic. Make sure we're good. Okay, do your little check.
Okay. Check, check, check. Check, 1, 2. Can you hear me?
I can.
How do I sound?
You sound incredible.
Okay.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Ride Home Podcast. My name is Abby.
And my name is Caitlin.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Hasn't it almost been? No, it hasn't almost been a year. It's been a couple of months, though. I just want to say thank you to everyone in advance for listening to this episode, because I know that it has been a long hiatus. And so if you're coming back to us, just know that we appreciate you so much. If you're new here, obviously my name is Abby, and my co-host is the lovely Caitlin, who is also my wife. And we go to the movies as often as we can. Unfortunately, in the past couple of months, it has not been any.
No.
Because we have dealt with a lot of just tough shit at work and in our personal life. You know, we lost our cat. Our dog was in the hospital. Mm-hmm. We got a new cat. You know, we've had family members in the hospital. And it's just been a little overwhelming to try and also put together a podcast during that time. So we appreciate everybody's patience, everybody, you know, kind of cheering us on. And I'm very happy to say that we are, in fact, back.
I know. I feel like we had to like dust off the headsets a little bit.
Yeah.
Clear out the cobwebs. This was the way it was supposed to happen. And this was when we were supposed to come back, because this movie came out and it's just right up our alley.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something that I think got us excited to get back into the studio, aka sitting on our bed in our room recording,
which it would be in the car, but we are unfortunately in the months of Charleston where we cannot record in our car because it's a little too toasty with the air conditioning off.
At this point, it's also like the pollen issue.
Yeah.
I don't know that this exists everywhere else, but right now we live in the dust bowl of pollen.
It's like we live in Mad Max, but it's pollen.
Literally.
Yeah.
/ Dune, maybe.
Yeah.
Like the spice.
Is it spice? It's eyes going to turn blue?
Yeah. Your eyes already blue.
By the way, we didn't do an episode, but we fucking love Dune 2.
Yeah. Can I just say, like, quickly,
yeah.
Dune 2
yeah.
is like a large,
large
popcorn times 10.
Times 1,000.
Chef's kiss.
Incredible.
Can't recommend it enough. I know this episode isn't about Dune, but now that we're talking about it, I just like, we have to just tell everyone.
Yeah. So we both feel as though Dune is one of those cinematic experiences that lists up there with like the great cinematic experiences. Not saying that this is one of the best movies of all time. There are certainly, you know, many, many movies we could put above this.
Sure.
As personal favorites and as just like cinematically what are considered the best movies of all time. But for me personally, this goes up there with like Oppenheimer, The Dark Knight, The Lord of the Rings, where it's that theatrical experience of being in the theater and experiencing something that I can only imagine is how people felt when they saw like Empire Strikes Back when Star Wars was first coming out. And, you know, like it's just that like shock and awe of like how did they make this?
Dune 2, like you said, is such an experience. And what sets it apart from the first one is just the immersion into this world that I think what you said about Star Wars really connected with me, because that is kind of what I love about Star Wars films, is that you do feel so kind of immersed into that world.
Yeah.
And I felt like Dune 2 really, really brought you there. Visually extremely impressive. The acting, no notes.
It was also the first time where I saw Timothée Chalamet and I was like, you know what? I get it now. I'm not, yay. I'm still not into him, but I understand why people are. And I think it was like him with like that big dick energy, like walking into the crowd and him shouting like silence at the mother superior bitch. Like, yeah. I get it now.
Okay.
So I will not question you anymore on why you are attracted to Timothée Chalamet.
Thank you. I'm sick of defending myself on that.
But anyway, we did see a much smaller film this week, and a much smaller budget, very different genre, but it is a movie that's kind of taking the internet by storm.
Mm-hmm.
When it first came out, I don't think very many people even knew that it was coming out.
I had no clue and that it even existed. Yeah,
and the reason why it started getting a lot of traction was because it was one of the very few and lucky movies that had an immediate 100% Rotten Tomatoes score.
Mm-hmm.
It has gone down, I think, to like 96-ish.
It's 96.
But yeah, it's still very, very high. And that is Late Night with the Devil. It is like a horror comedy satire kind of big mix conglomerate of things.
Mm-hmm.
Also found footage. I think it's a really interesting addition to the horror world. I personally am not sure that I've seen something like it. And mm-hmm. so I understand why once it got out there and people started seeing it, they were like, wait a second, what?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So can you give us a quick synopsis of Late Night with the Devil and just a cast list as well?
Yes. Yeah, so the synopsis is one singular sentence.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we get.
Short and sweet. I love it.
In 1977, a live television broadcast goes horribly wrong, unleashing evil into the nation's living rooms. This movie stars David Dismalchin, Ingrid Torelli, Laura Gordon, Georgina Haig, and that's about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of names and faces that you won't necessarily recognize, but David Dismalchin, we did have to look up how to say his last name, but he is a very recognizable face. He has been in a lot of movies as like a character actor and a little bit smaller roles. And I think this might be his first lead role. I'm not 1,000% sure. But he is kind of our titular character, the center of the of the movie. He is the host of a late night talk show.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to Johnny Carson. Mm-hmm. Very similar to when it was our age, we were Conan and who was the other one? Well, it was David Letterman and Conan.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's Jimmy Kimmel and whoever the fuck. I don't know.
Jimmy Fallon.
Ew, really? He's still on air?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay.
And also James Corden.
Oh, gross.
Yeah.
I don't.
Well, sorry. Him. That's what that's who's out there right now.
I don't know why I wasn't disgusted by Jimmy Kimmel, because I also don't like him.
We don't like any of them.
I did love Conan, though. Conan was my shit.
Yeah.
But basically, he is set in the world of Johnny Carson.
Mm-hmm.
He is, like, Johnny Carson exists in this world.
Uh-huh.
And basically, he is number two to Johnny Carson. He's been, you know, hustling to get to, you know, the top spot, been trying to climb the ratings, and he just can't quite seem to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And he eventually, on a Halloween night, produces an episode where he brings a very controversial comedian who is going to do like a reading of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And a skeptic who is going to kind of sit there and bounce off ideas and be like, well, this is fake because of this, and this is fake because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's also bringing in a psychologist and a girl who was taken from a home where there was a cult of demonic people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the 70s cults that we all know of, like, is it Jonestown, I think, is one of the cults.
Yes, that sounds right.
Right. Yeah. The Kool-Aid people.
Yeah.
So basically, they did a mock version of what we all know as like the 70s suicide cults, where basically this girl was taken from a cult that killed themselves once they were discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And they lit the whole house on fire, but only this girl came out.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, her claim to fame is that she is chronically possessed by a demon.
Correct.
So it really touches on a lot of the satanic panic and the cults, and it really does link reality with this fake world.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting part of it is that it is all found footage, and it's basically quote unquote the master tapes from this evening of television. So that being said, with that little setup and background, we're gonna go to our classic question.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin, what are your thoughts and feelings on Late Night with the Devil?
We haven't discussed this at all.
No, not at all.
Like, we didn't even leave and say, I liked that.
Nope.
Or that was good.
Nothing.
Like, zero comments have been shared. So I don't know if this will surprise you or not, but I loved this movie for a few reasons. Mm-hmm. One of the main reasons why I love this movie is that I really, really loved TV Land when I was younger. Yeah. And I loved all of those classic shows like I Dream of Jeannie, I Love Lucy, the Carol Burnett Show, and so many more.
Yeah.
And so what I really loved about this film is that it captured the feeling of that time and shows during that time perfectly. I couldn't have even like imagined a better depiction of that if I tried.
Yeah.
Like just the attention to detail.
It was flawless. Yeah.
Was absolutely flawless. And I was really impressed by that piece alone because it really felt like something out of a time capsule.
Mm-hmm.
I guess kind of like going back to Dune 2, I felt like it really immersed me in that time period.
Mm-hmm.
And what was happening, like you said, in our country during that time in history. What I also thought was done really well was the pacing and character arcs, the story building. Like there are so many good things about this story that I felt like it held my attention the entire time. Yeah. And I was honestly in suspense the entire time.
And I think one of the positives, too, is that it is a very concise like 93 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it is a real time minus the introduction, which is like it's basically what you see from like VH1 like documentaries about like
I Love the 70s.
Yeah. Where it was basically showing the background of the time, introducing the host Jack Delroy and giving us some background on who he is and how he got on air and all that. After that introduction, it's real time.
It's just the show.
It's just the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you feel like you're just watching a TV show. Mm-hmm. Like it really does feel like you're watching an old TV show and the shit is hitting the fan.
Uh-huh.
And there is something really special about found footage horror.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it feel so much more real. It just sits with you a little bit heavier than when you're watching a standard horror movie. I love found footage horror.
Yeah.
Hell House is incredibly underrated, and I'm going to shout it through the rooftops that everyone should watch that movie.
I knew somehow Hell House was going to get brought up.
Because it's the best found footage horror.
You love Hell House so much. It is so scary.
If you think Blair Witch Project scary, please go watch. Like Hell House just feels real. It feels like, you know, like we were saying, like
immersive.
Your immersive experience. Mm-hmm. And this movie, even though it's a completely, again, it's almost like a different genre of horror. Mm-hmm. It's completely a different style. It really does feel like you're watching a tape from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Also, every single character feels like they're from the 70s.
Yeah.
Like, even the way that David Dismalchin, like, spoke and just the way he mastered the character of Jack Delroy was so perfect. Even just down to the way he stood on stage with, like, the one hand in the pocket, the slight lean, the uncomfortable, like filling time with jokes.
Mm-hmm.
We've all watched a late night show and it fits so perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And he did such a good job in that role. And I honestly think if they did not get an actor that was capable of giving us that Jack Delroy, I'm not sure it would have been as good of a movie, if we're being honest.
No, I was going to say that I think that was probably like my third favorite thing about this movie is David Dismalchin, because I feel like, and his character, I feel like he completely, I almost said embodied, but then I wanted to say he bodied it, because he did.
He did body it.
He completely embodied, like you said, a man from that time who was famous, who was on air, who was on a show. Like just even his mannerisms, the way he carried himself, the way he held himself, it was just all very spot on.
Yeah.
And I feel like he did an impeccable job in this movie.
He did such a good job that it reminded me of Tar, where it was like he almost felt like they were doing a caricature or like a representation of somebody who was real.
Yeah.
Like they did such a good job with his character. And again, I think he carried the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And in a weird way, even if it wasn't a horror, the way that Jack was so real and interesting and layered I honestly could have watched this movie with, like, the whole demonic possession part taken out.
Mm-hmm.
I could have watched a show just about Jack Delroy, to be completely honest with you, or a movie about Jack Delroy.
And honestly, I feel like that could have been a really interesting movie, too, if they were just doing a film about him and his backstory, and then somehow him self-imploding on him, like, as he was trying to reach this number one ranking or whatever. I feel like that could have been a really interesting film too, without horror at all,
right? Which I think that goes to show that there is such a layered aspect to this movie, is that it's not just, you know, very baseline, it's a found footage movie and it has a demon in it. Like, it it is so developed and so layered that when you're watching it, you're like, wow, like, you didn't even really need the horror part. Like, it was the horror part, obviously, like, we enjoyed it, we're big horror fans, but just hats off to the directors, who we think are brothers.
I'm pretty sure they are. And also, they're from Australia, which leads me to my next segment, which I would like to call, why are Australians so fucking good at making movies?
I was gonna say, I was surprised that, like, your fourth favorite thing about this movie wasn't the fact that there were 1,000 production companies introduced at the beginning of the
movie. Oh my god, so never in my life have I seen so many production companies.
I'm still not sure if that wasn't a joke, because it felt like after, like, the fourth production company intro that it had to be a joke.
Yeah,
because it was these elaborate, you know, everybody's seen, like, the Blumhouse animation where it's like the spinning chair and stuff like that, but it was like 6 or 7 of them,
upwards of 10, like,
yeah.
it was definitely less than 10, but more than 5.
It was so extreme that it felt like it had to have been satire.
Yeah,
which we're gonna there have was to
like,
look into that.
Yeah, there was like a certain point, like you said, where I it was like after the third the or fourth one, where I looked at you and I was like, how many fucking production companies? And then it just kept going afterwards, and so we were both kind of like, are they, like, making fun of it? Mm-hmm. I can't tell.
I think they were.
I think they were, too.
Which, like, genius.
I think that's so funny.
That's so funny. Whether or not that was a joke, though, I will say that there was a decent amount of comedy within the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think our audience necessarily understood it.
They did not.
Because I was, like, holding back my laughter a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that experience that you're just like, is this supposed to be funny?
Yeah.
But I think it was supposed to be funny. It definitely was supposed to be funny. And the kid next to us who was eating his popcorn off the floor.
Yeah, what a choice.
He had his bucket of popcorn in between his feet and would lean forward and eat it. I did catch him chuckling at times that, like, I wanted to chuckle, but he kind of did, like, the, you know, like, the little, like, quiet
to yourself,
the quiet to yourself chuckle. I wanted to laugh along with him, but I felt like the plus 50 audience that was with us wasn't enjoying themselves as much.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Which is weird, because, like, that's their time. Like, that's their that vibe, is their time, you know?
But also, it was sort of like, well, it wasn't sort of, it was very dry humor.
Yeah.
And do you sometimes feel like it's like halfway through the movie and you can just feel in the room that you might be the only person who likes this movie?
Even though you can't see a single person.
You can't see anyone, but I just felt in this movie like the energy left the room.
Yeah.
At a certain point, because it's
that's
almost
how it was when we saw The Menu too.
It's when people go to see a movie with expectations and the expectations aren't met.
Yeah.
And you lose them.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like we lost them, but I was still there.
Oh, we were in it.
And Floor Popcorn Guy was also still there.
Yeah, he was vibing. He was chuckling.
Yeah.
I respect him. I respect him Popcorn too. Popcorn Floor Guy.
Floor Popcorn Guy.
Floor Popcorn Guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that being said, I really have one big issue with this movie.
Oh.
Can I give you my big issue?
I always want to know what your big issue is.
I genuinely hated 90% of the behind the scenes stuff.
Okay.
And my reasoning for it is because I thought they did a really clunky job of explaining how they got the behind the scenes footage. Because basically at the end of every segment, they go to commercial break. The camera switches to this black and white behind the scenes camera, but we lose the 70s TV show green. It looks like they just put a normal camera into black and white. The sound is perfect. It's framed perfectly.
Okay.
And it doesn't feel like it's found footage anymore. It feels like we just slip into like a normal movie. I would have loved if they caught those moments organically from the cameras in the studio.
Okay.
So basically, okay. It would have been cool if it was like a hot mic situation where they're still mic'd and they're talking. It felt too polished and too clean, and it really yoinked me out. And it was almost like, that's why I went to the bathroom when they cut. Because once they cut from the TV show, I was just like, man, like, get back to the show. Like,
yeah.
And it didn't really do that much for me. Sure, it developed kind of more the fact that June and Jack had a relationship. I think you probably could have picked that up, though, if you did like the hot mic situation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If it was a lot more like you could just do these wide shots, you could even do the cameraman adjusting the focus and like checking his shot, but you hear the mic off on the corner and like you see Jack and June like out of focus in the back having a conversation. That would have been so cool. And I think they had a lot of opportunity that they just kind of got lazy with it.
When you say behind the scenes,
it wasn't behind
the scenes.
That's
not what that was.
And there was no introduction of who was documenting the behind the scenes.
No.
And I think that was a mistake because they could have maybe said like maybe Jack hired this kid to record things because he thought like this was the night his career was going to turn around and one day people are going to want to see this or, you know, something like that. They could have given us a little bit more to that. And because it was such a huge part of the movie, at least give it a reason, make it make sense.
Give it some purpose.
And I'm telling you, the beauty of found footage is seeing things off in the distance, out of focus, things you have to kind of pick up on. If Jack and the producer were having a conversation, they could have had like Lily off screen, like really out of focus, but like really deep in the background.
Yeah.
Kind of staring down Jack.
Mm-hmm.
There could have been a lot of really cool, creepy moments built by that. So unfortunately, that is my big main issue across the board for this movie.
I think that's fair. And I think you're kind of like a little bit of like a found footage savant because you like, you love that style of movie and you watch a lot of it. And I think out of the ones I've seen, I also agree that some of the scariest moments are not the things that are out in the open and like part of the script, but more so just like little subversive things and little kind of things that kind of almost sneak past you that you don't see. I think those are so much creepier and scarier than just like a possessed kid.
Yeah.
Which it was creepy, but it was like,
Not scary. And I think that is one thing that I will say a casual horror fan could very much see this movie. If you're, 100%. If you're, you know, a little bit afraid of gore, if you're there's only one scene that I would consider like you might want to close your eyes for. It's the worm scene. If you hear them start to talk about worms,
close your eyes.
Mm-hmm. It's not that bad for like a regular horror watcher, but if you're a little squeamish, I would say there's only one scene that's, you know, traumatic or what have you.
Yeah.
I will say though that the fear that is built within this movie was that kind of foreboding sense of what's going to happen because you know that something's going to happen. It's almost like you're waiting for an accident to happen where it's like raw footage of an accident, raw footage of whatever.
Sure.
And so you kind of are sitting there like tense, holding your breath, waiting for whatever's going to happen. And I feel like that's where that unsettled, kind of deep, foreboding energy kind of plays over the whole movie. And it's not necessarily the fear is in demonic possession. It is more of that building and building and building and building and waiting for this climax that's inevitable. And you're just like, when is it gonna happen?
I think that is kind of like one of my favorite things about this film is the tension that builds because you're already anticipating it before it's even begun.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, as they're setting it up for what this show is and who Jack Delroy is and everything. And it's like, okay, like, get to the punchline. He's having this Halloween episode. And then it's like, as soon as it starts, you're like, okay, what? Like, let's go.
Yeah.
Like, what is going to happen? That feeling kind of never went away.
No.
Pretty much the entire, after like the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Until the end. Yeah.
Yeah. To me, that's what is makes a good horror movie. That's mm-hmm. what makes a good movie and what keeps an audience, you know, minus the boomers that we didn't, that the boomers we lost.
The boomers we lost along the way. Now, we do need to talk about one more thing before okay. we wrap this up and give our popcorn scores. There is a little bit of controversy.
Okay, tell me about this controversy. I'm not familiar.
So, basically, the bumpers that we see within the show, which are the little Halloween icons that mm-hmm. basically, as part of the master tape, this is the graphic that comes up for the audience that's like, this is our Halloween episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very vintage-looking Halloween graphics.
Uh-huh.
They made those through AI. So basically, whatever AI source they used, they just typed in vintage 1970s Halloween graphic, whatever.
Okay.
And then they said that they tweaked them from there.
Okay.
A lot of people are very upset because there is this running theme in the industry that I think a lot of people, especially during the strikes, were mm-hmm. pointing towards, which is, you know, we have these AI capabilities. What is that going to do for designers? What is that going to do for actors? What is that going to do for jobs in theater production moving, or not theater, in movie production moving forward?
Okay.
And because of these, I think it's like four graphics that they used, mm-hmm. maybe. A lot of people are boycotting this film because they are anti-AI.
Okay.
I have a interesting perspective here.
Mm-hmm.
I am an editor by trade. Mm-hmm. That is my job. I get paid to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I work in this industry. I do not make movies, but I do make video.
Uh-huh.
I, on a regular basis, use some form of AI.
Okay.
Whether it's to clean up an image quickly, whether it's to, you know, pull something out of a picture that I didn't want in there.
Mm-hmm.
There are tools that we have that are very quick and easy to use that speed up what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
If they were using AI totally and completely throughout the entire project and every single photo that they made was AI and they never, and uh-huh. you know, if it was leaning really heavily into AI, I can understand why people might be upset because it takes away the artistry.
Sure.
But to be honest with you, a bumper for a fake TV show, they could have paid somebody $5 on Fiverr to do that.
Sure.
And they could have technically, you know, paid them $5 and put it in the movie and then no one would be upset by it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they came out and said it. So I'm also not that upset because
sure, the transparency
it's not something
there.
That they're hiding. No one at all, period, who works in the film industry who isn't at the C-suite level wants anyone to lose their job.
Mm-hmm.
They want to keep designers employed. They want to keep people who are in VFX going.
Sure.
And we are a very long way away. I know people are really scared by the AI thing that just came out where it was like, it's a video AI generator, basically, mm-hmm. that they just released. And it looks scary to people who work in VFX. But we are a really long way away from that being totally customizable to the point that somebody would want to put it in their film.
Okay.
And so we have these little pieces of AI that we can use as tools or like a quick, you know, make me a skeleton graphic.
Sure, sure.
That I don't necessarily find to be controversial from my perspective.
Okay.
Does it bother you at all?
Of course, I don't want anyone who is a creative and that's their job and that's their livelihood.
You don't want me to stop making money.
No, I don't want you to stop making money and I don't want anyone else who's a creative person working in film or this industry at all to lose their job because of AI. AI terrifies me for many, many reasons, just like on a human level.
Yeah.
Let alone like what it's going to mean for people's jobs. So I think, of course, I don't want that to start replacing people. And
it is a slippery slope.
It is a slippery slope.
I can completely acknowledge that.
100%. But I think it doesn't bother me in this context for kind of the same reasons you said. There's the transparency. I appreciate that more than someone who did it and didn't then try to play it off like they didn't, you know? So I think this doesn't bother me, but I think it's something to be very careful with because it's kind of like playing with fire.
It is playing with fire for sure. And I really do think that moving forward as an industry, transparency is going to be a huge 100%. Part of it. I still do not think that we are going to have like fully customizable AI movies anytime soon. It's going to be really hard. It's really clunky. I recently, for my job, was tasked with looking into AI and seeing what it can and cannot do. And I typed in very similar descriptions of what my company works on. And they were almost comical at how bad they were.
Wow.
So I want people to kind of take a deep breath when it comes to AI stuff, because it is a slippery slope for sure. It is a little bit scary. But if you watched some of these AI generated movies or pieces, segments that I that I watched, you would also laugh. They are very funny. I do not think anybody should be boycotting this movie because of it, because there are clearly some really talented and dedicated artists, directors, actors, set designers, people that really made this world come alive, that I think just taking all of that away based on four AI images is not fair.
No, I agree. And I think as long as it's handled this way and it's done for something so not, I mean, superfluous isn't the word. I don't know. Just some
kind of is.
Kind of.
They could have, genuinely, they could have bought a sweatshirt design from some Midwestern middle-aged woman. And just like plastered that on as this Halloween bumper. I'm telling you, it literally looks like one of those vintage Halloween sweatshirts that every white girl is wearing.
Yeah, I feel like October. It's really unimportant. So I feel like as long as it's to that level of what we're using it for and the level of transparency of like, hey, just FYI.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it.
Maybe it should be like how they got rid of smoking in restaurants, where it's basically like if you have a certain percentage of your sales be the amount of food that you serve, you can't have cigarettes in your bar or in your restaurant. Maybe they should, you know, make some laws about movies and film and TV where it's like if you have a certain percentage of AI, you can't.
I think we have to do that.
Yeah, I would be completely comfortable with doing that. I think that there absolutely should be rules around AI. I think before we move into the future of AI being involved in film, we definitely need some oversight from, honestly, I wouldn't like it to be the government, because fuck the government. No. I'm sorry if you like them, but I don't.
Yeah.
But I would love if the studios and the unions came together and came up with a number that they all feel comfortable with of like, this is the percentage of AI that can be based on minutes of your film. This is the percentage that that AI can be involved in.
I think if anyone's regulating it, it should be the people who make these movies.
Exactly.
Not the government. They don't even know. I'm sorry.
They don't know anything.
They don't know anything about anything or anyone.
Yeah.
So I think
they have also regulated a little bit too much recently. So yeah, we're just like gonna they cut their need to
sit down and
volume off.
They need to sit down and they need to let
everyone in government. I want you guys to know we're talking about both sides.
All of you.
Is the FBI listening right now? We're coming for you.
They already are.
We're bringing you down.
Hello, this is Abby. If our audio sounds different, this is on my phone and it's like 6 o'clock in the morning. We're a little bit rusty and getting back into the swing of things. Totally forgot to do our popcorn ratings. So Caitlin, what is your popcorn score for Late Night with the Devil?
It is a large popcorn for me.
It's also a large popcorn for me. We'll get back to your regularly scheduled programming.
So sorry.
Sorry, guys. Love you.
Thank you guys so much for coming back to us or for joining us for the first time. I'm serious. Like, I feel like I was almost dreading coming back because I knew it was going to be a lot of work for me. But now that we're talking, and I feel like I needed somewhere to put my stress and my energy in, like, a positive outlet.
Yeah.
And so I'm very excited to be back.
Me too.
And we do not know what the next episode is going to be. I'm going to stop, like, previewing that in this because... Well, we'll just put it this way. Our life is very unexpected recently. Mm-hmm. A lot of things happen, and I don't want to make promises we can't keep.
No, we are not in the business of doing that.
No.
So
in the light of what we were just talking about, which is the big T word, transparency, I'm going to be transparent. Caitlin's going to be transparent. We got a lot of shit going on, and we're going to make episodes when we can make episodes. Yeah. And we're going to see movies when we can make movies.
All of a sudden we're filmmakers.
I mean, make it to the theater.
Correct.
That was a horrible way of saying it.
I knew what you meant.
But you know what, we're gonna do what we can. We're excited to be back, and we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for joining us on the ride home. We missed you
guys.